So in the homework, or the tutorial, the task was to calculate that the OPEs looked like this, like the one loop OPEs. Delta j. Was this the sign you guys were confused about? Or?
No, I think, the OP, sign the OPE, so which was.
Like the relative sign between the chiral and anti-chiral fields?
No. I feel that was the propagator, right?
Yeah.
Two-point functions.
This is the two-point function, yeah.
Came from the orientation, you said.
Yes, yeah.
But the OP itself that you wanted to calculate had a minus sign.
Okay, so
that. And that was like we were not sure how that was organized, how that came.
Yeah,
out.
No, it's. A,
whether that was even important.
It's a sign is not important. It is. It's kind of painful to get it right. I find in these calculations with the fermionic fields, so at a kind of impressionistic level to see what form it takes. Let's not worry too much about it. So this was like, this looked like some constant, which absorbs this sign.
You mean W bar in the second?
Oh, sorry, thank you. Say W and W bar. Everything. When I say something is a function of W, I implicitly mean it's a function of both.
What's in the second line, I guess? Yeah,
thank you. This is some constant times log W squared times psi bar I 0 psi j at 0. So they switch roles. So this is basically the calculation you had in the homework. So let me remind you of the diagram that leads to this one. There's psi I. There's psi bar j. The propagator connects psi bar j with psi bar j. This with connects psi I with psi I. So the other two terms, we look at the form of the interaction. There's a psi bar I and a psi j. And it's accompanied by some integral. So it's, and then there's some integral for like integral over w prime. Of the form 1 over w prime 1 over it's accompanied by an integral of this form. And you can check that this integral. Well, you have to worry a little bit about the convergence of this integral for large w prime. But as we discussed yesterday, we deal with that by saying we just integrate over some bounded region by introducing an infrared cutoff. And that infrared cutoff won't affect anything. And then you find that up to non-singular terms, the result of the integral is this logarithm times some constant. Okay. Any questions about this?
Question.
Yeah.
So you're saying that expression is the expression for the OPE, the integral?
Yeah, so the integral accompanies some functions,
right.
Some size, which I've stripped off, but this integral gives you the OPE.
So there's some of those size you've stripped them off. Okay.
Right. So here we just have, this is the vertex we're integrating over, and then we have the two propagators connecting it. So I'm not the best person in the world at doing integrals, so I've got this one right. So, maybe we should just take a quick minute to do the integral, or is this a waste of time? Okay, so here's the trick. I'll do the integral and not worry so much about the constants and just kind of determine the form of the function of w. So the trick is dw bar prime over w bar prime is d log w bar prime. So it looks like the integral of a total derivative del w bar prime log w bar prime 1 over w minus w prime. However, let's see. So it looks like the integral of a total derivative, but then we notice that this function is not continuous. It has a branch cut. So this is the origin. Over here is w. I'll take the branch cut going to minus infinity. So I pick up a boundary term from where this coordinate crosses the branch cut, just by the lack of continuity. I can really think of it as I'm integrating over domain with boundary here and a boundary here. And the difference between the two boundaries is 2 pi I times this thing. So I get two terms, the integral now over some real variable. And the branch cut. And the other term is from the fact that the derivative of this applied to this guy is a delta function. Okay. Log w bar. So this term should give you log w, this will give you log w bar. Together they give log of w times w bar. Sorry, a bit sloppy. This is roughly how it goes. Okay. So what do we learn from the OP? So the first thing we learn is that while the theory at the classical level is conformal, the quantum theory cannot be. The way it's conformal is that the psi I have dimension 1/2. And if you look in the Lagrangian, there are those two terms which have a derivative and two psi's. That gives you dimension 2, so something we can integrate. And a term with four psi's, which has dimension 2. So the Lagrangian is, so the integral of the Lagrangian is scale invariant. I.e. dimension 0. But at the classical level, sorry, at the quantum level, this OP So this guy is not scale invariant. Now, if I scale the coordinate w and scale all my fields by their appropriate dimension, this guy becomes psi I 0 psi r j lambda w, and the right-hand side becomes constant log lambda w squared What is it? A good way to say this. Sorry, 1 second. You know, in a conformally invariant theory, you can read off the weight of these functions in terms of the dimensions of the operators. So on this side, we have something of dimension 1. And over here, we have something of dimension 1. And if this really was conformally invariant, you would have a function of dimension 0 to make the dimensions add up. But this is not quite of dimension 0. If I scale w, I get the same thing plus an extra term involving log, the logarithm of the factor I'm scaling by. So scale invariance is spoiled by the fact that log of lambda squared w squared is log lambda squared plus log w squared. So this function is not quite of dimension 0. Does this make sense to you guys? So, I mean, as a rule of thumb, if you see a logarithm in the OPE, it tells you you cannot be in a conformal field theory.
So, question.
Yeah.
Sorry. Like, whenever we have log of w in an expression, we assume implicitly there's another log to make that dimensionless argument, right?
How do you mean? Like,
w is not dimensionless, right? So, but if
yes.
The argument of a log, the argument of a log has to be dimensionless. And
I mean, no, I mean, there's something. I mean, W is not dimensionless. Why does the argument of a log have to be dimensionless?
Doesn't it? I mean, as a mathematician, like the exponential of, when we say exponential of an angle, we don't put degrees there, right? We put radians because it's kind of dimensionless number. Right? Or, I don't know.
I see what you're saying, but there's nothing stopping me from taking the logarithm of a meter, or like, I mean, which is what we're. Let's see. So here's explain in words some subtleties about this. Now, if we throw away non-singular functions, then this is dimensionless because the failure of the logarithm to be scale invariant is this non-singular function. However, if we have an honest quantum field theory, then the operator product expansion is defined, including the non-singular terms. This expression just tells us, you know, whatever I decide the constant term to be, it is not possible to figure out a constant term which will make this whole thing dimensionless. So therefore, the theory must have, must not be conformal and must have some non-trivial beta function. Okay. I think we will later see how the, like there's a Feynman diagram from which you can compute the beta function, and we'll see later how to relate it to this calculation. Okay. So now we've had this kind of interlude about OPEs, let's go back to monodromy matrices. So let me remind you of something that happens in the vertex model. This is something that Alex discussed right at the beginning, that we can expand the monodromy matrix in series in 1 over z. The coefficients are a sequence of operators which act on the Hilbert space of the vertex model. These Tij n act on the Hilbert space. And satisfy some relations. Which define the Yangian algebra. So the picture for how to figure out these relations was the following. So I might have had M, this was I, and J, this is ZZ, K, L, this was ZZ prime. This was equal to something where I go like this. I, J, L, K, Z, Z, Z prime, Z, Z prime. So these were these lines we draw in our lattice model. And over here, at these intersections, I put the OR matrix. So by analyzing this picture, I think, which is something Alex did, you found out that the product of M, I, J, Z, M, K, M, L, K, Z prime is written in terms of OR M, Z prime, MZ, OR. So I haven't written out all the indices. So it's a product of the OR, some contraction of these guys with the OR matrix. This gives you an expression for the relations. So what Alex worked out, if you write down the formula for the OR matrix and expand everything and calculate what these relations are, you find the following expressions. So the lowest order terms with this index 0, these just commute like ordinary matrices. So this is delta IL TK J0 minus delta KJ TIL0. So these are just ordinary matrices. So this tells us that the Hilbert space has symmetry of the unitary group. The next one I can see what happens when I commute the level 0 with the level 1. And again, this looks like the kind of formulas you see in ordinary matrices. So this tells us we have UN symmetry. This tells us we have some other transformations, other symmetries with the same indices as the UN generators. But these guys do not form another copy of UN. They satisfy a different relation. So this relation is much more complicated. So here, the commutator of two guys is a linear function in the T's. So in this one, I'm not going to find a linear function in the T's anymore. So before writing the expression, I just want to say, there's a slight technical point, which I'm going to gloss over a little bit. There are two forms of this relation. One form is what appears naturally when you study the vertex models. And there's another form which will appear when we study the monodromy matrices in a continuum field theory. Now, the expressions, the polynomials in T we'll find on this side are slightly different. But they're just related by some simple change of coordinates. So I'll write down the version of it which appears when we study field theory. Get my notes. This is the first term is a kind of the usual kind of thing. Called I L M K J of 2 minus delta K J M I L of 2. And the next there's this new term. Okay, so I had M in my notes, and I had T in the blackboard. Sorry about that. OK, so if you look at this side, it looks at first sight like some quartic expression, but we can use this relation to contract. You contract them in pairs, and it turns out to be a particular cubic polynomial in the T's. I wrote it like this because it's writing out all the terms is a bit tedious. So this is some cubic polynomial. In the T's. Okay? And I'll write out explicitly one of the terms in a second. And then try to compute that the monodromy matrix in the field theory satisfies. As this form. So, for instance, if I, J, K, L are distinct, then T, I, J, 0, so 1, T, K, L, 1, is going to have a term like TIL 0 TK beta 0 T beta J 0 plus some other cubic expressions. Okay. So let's, well, there's no questions. Let's move on to, are there questions? Yeah. So let's move on to trying to understand this from the point of view of field theory. So we look at the monodromy matrix in a field theory, and we'll expand it out and try to calculate that this relation holds. And we'll use these, we'll use some of these OBEs, just the simpler ones we'll need to do this calculation. So the monodromy matrix is a path ordered exponential from like x equals minus infinity to infinity of the Lax operator in the x direction with some boundary conditions. So we'd like to expand this out in powers of 1 over z. Lij zw is 1 over z psi j psi I. Sorry, here we're going back to the Turing model because it's a bit easier for these calculations with psi I and psi upper I. And L I J Z. W bar is 1 over 1 minus Z psi bar J psi bar I. So, we can expand this out in powers of 1 over z. So this is 1 over z, so the first term is like 1 over z, maybe minus 1 over z, plus, minus again, 1 over z squared. So what does this tell us? That this path ordered exponential is an integral of some number of points on the line. And if we're just looking at the coefficients of, you know, 1 over z, 1 over z squared, we're only going to have either 1 or 2 points. so what's the coefficient of 1 over z? Is, I'll probably write the sign wrong or something, but if we look at all our terms, it's, if we write m I j z, it's delta I j plus 1 over z as a t I j, then t I j 0 is equal to the integral from x equals minus infinity to infinity. Remember, we should be picking up the x component of the Lax matrix, and that's obtained by adding the w and w bar components so that the iy components cancel out. And we'll find psi j x psi I x plus or minus psi bar j x psi bar I x. Now, this quantity here, this is equal to the current for the UN action. If we get the signs right. If you remember, how do we figure out the current? We look at the kinetic term and we replace a derivative by covariant derivative and look at the coefficient of the background gauge field. And the coefficient of the x component of the background gauge field will be this. So what have we discovered? That the leading order term in this expansion is the charge associated to the current. If I have a conserved current, then I can integrate it over any over space to get a charge which is conserved. So therefore, Tij0 is equal to the charge conserved current. Now, what about Tij1? This is the coefficient of minus 2. So there's going to be a bunch of terms when we look at this. So because I'm going to be integrating the x component of the Lax operator, I must add the w and w bar components. So the w bar component by itself will contribute something up there. So one of the terms will be the integral. So this will have a local term where I just integrate a single L. And other terms where I integrate two L's. So there's a couple of them. So for instance, there's this one. So the picture I have in mind is I have two points on a line. And I'm integrating the sum of LW and LW bar over these two points, where this point is below that point. And there's four terms. because it can be LW, LW, LW bar, these kind of cross terms. And I've written down one of the four terms.
What is the difference between, say, T1 and T0? Is it just the sum, or?
You mean like, the local term?
Yeah, I mean.
I see, so you're right that the local term of T1 looks a lot like one of the coefficients,
okay.
T0. Okay. But T1 will be a sum of this and other stuff.
Right.
So the local term is not really the interesting one. So we want to compute the commutator of these charges with each other. So it's going to be a pretty complicated expression because there's four terms, and I'm going to try to compute them past each other. Do five terms. That leads to 25 different integrals you'd want to do. And we're not going to do that. What we're going to do is just analyze one of the possibilities and see why it leads to some of the terms. It leads to a cubic expression in T0, just like we would want it to. I'll just state that, in the literature, if you read some of the papers on this topic, they will they'll go to these calculations probably much quicker than I'm doing. Now, I have to explain what we mean by commutator. So we want to compute and so we will analyze the term. The commutator, what does this mean? Consider the monodromy matrix at a particular value of y. The line coordinate y. This is x, so we integrate over this line. Now we know that this is independent of y. So we can consider the OPE now. It's a bit different than the OPEs we considered before, because these are non-local operators involving integrals of local operators. So I'll call this epsilon. So this is, by the kind of things we discussed, this can be expanded out in terms of some functions of epsilon. And some operators, where these operators must again be non-local operators, where I integrate them over some line. However, something funny happens here. Because of this equation, we know that this OPE must be independent of epsilon. But del epsilon of So you think, what kind of, you know, the OPE is something, at least the way we've been treating it, it's something defined up to non-singular functions. So what singular functions of epsilon have zero derivative? Well, these are functions defined away from epsilon equals zero. So there's only really one, which is a Heaviside step function. So we can write it like this, prime epsilon. So the only function that can appear is, well, I'll write it as the sine of epsilon times some other operator. This other operator is the commutator. Okay, so let me draw a little picture to indicate what's going on. Now, because this operator is independent of epsilon, I can bring this over here and take this and can bring them together without introducing any singularities. And that will be the product in one way. I could also put this operator on the other side and bring it over here, again, without introducing any singularities. That's a product in the other way. We're interested in the difference between them. So that's what's captured by saying, you know, that's this way minus this way. So that's why we can find the sine of epsilon. So now let's do the calculation. Actually, this is a kind of off topic, but it's pretty fun to, you know, you write down a Lagrangian for quantum mechanics, you compute the commutator of position and momentum, you find, you know, you can be the OPE of position and momentum, you'll find the sine of time appearing, which is why the commutator of position and momentum is one. So the computation this might be Mij z 0. But if you remember, we're only going to be interested in, so let me write this. TKL at epsilon. So I'm just going to compute one of the terms. So this guy will have psi j, psi beta. Psi beta, psi I, and this one will have psi L, psi alpha, psi k. So what we're computing, so one operator is this integral. Psi j of x. Psi beta x1, psi beta x2, psi I of x2. And the other one is the integral x3 less than x4, psi L x psi alpha x3, psi alpha x4, psi k, x4. We're computing the OP between of these guys. And the way the OP is going to work, and we're only doing it to first order, so we're going to like pairwise contract any something here with something here using a propagator. So one of the possible terms will be, I'll write this on this side, one of the possible terms will be a propagator connects, say, this one. So one term of the OPE will be if you look at this guy, x1, x2, x3, x4, so that's going to be psi j, psi l, x1. Actually, sorry. It's going to be psi j. Now, this psi beta and this psi l have been contracted, and they're gone. They've been replaced by a propagator. Psi j, x1. If you get the indices right, that's not so important. The index beta must now be l. So that's psi l, x2, psi k, x2. Psi alpha x3. But now we have to insert the propagator. So this integral is over. I'll put in the other coordinate as well. Epsilon, 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 and the propagator is 1 over. So what's x1 minus x3 plus I epsilon? Because that's epsilon is the other coordinate. Okay. Yeah?
Sorry, just to be sure, you're saying that to order h bar, we want include one propagator, that's right?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm being lazy about factors of pi and so on. Okay. Should I finish this calculation next time, do you think? I mean, how much? Do you guys normally stop at 12:30 or earlier?
I can go a few minutes later.
Okay. Okay, except we'll accept lunch. But I can, okay, maybe we'll go on for a few minutes then. So what we're interested, I'm going to expand this when epsilon is small, and we're going to discard terms which tend to 0 as epsilon goes to 0. We're only going to be interested in those terms which jump as epsilon crosses the origin. So if you notice that psi alpha x3 epsilon is psi alpha x3 0 plus epsilon del y, just doing a Taylor expansion, these terms involving an epsilon, these terms don't contribute. Sorry, they should be side. Which means that this integral here, we can set. Here we can set epsilon equals 0 in this piece. And now, once we do that, we realize that we can kind of forget about, you know, there's 2 points, there's 4 points where we're integrating. 2 of those points are connected by a propagator, and 2 of them are not connected by a propagator. We can kind of ignore the points which are not, don't have a propagator on them. Of this kind of thing. Some propagator, which I read, I think I wrote like this. So these 2 points don't play any, like they don't contribute to the singularities as epsilon goes to 0 because they're not touched by the propagator. And I've arranged things so that the only point which I integrate over on the epsilon line is the one which is touched by a propagator. And I want to compare this to the same kind of thing. This is at 0, and this is at minus epsilon.
Those 2 points on top, should they be on the same line or different lines?
Well, they're on the same line, but I was just using trying to explain that here.
Yeah, okay, you're setting epsilon to 0.
Those factors, you can set epsilon to 0, which is kind of why you can ignore them. So the difference between the two of them is effectively a contour integral. Right. So the difference between the two sides is kind of modulo, like up to small terms, to that order epsilon terms. So if we fix, this point is x3, we fix x1, x2, x4, and then we're going to integrate x3 in a contour around x2. That's x2. These guys are fixed, and x3 is integrated in the contour, going from there up to there, there. And the bottom part and top part, the size of that is about epsilon, so it doesn't matter. Okay. Now, see, I realize we're going a little fast on this point, but we just noticed then there's a function, the only thing which has a pole is given by the propagator. It's just by the residue theorem. Tells us that the result is when this x3 is at x2. So the integral x2, I'm really sorry, this was a. Encounter around x1, sorry. This is x1. So we integrate x1. Now, because we've contracted some tensors, we only find some c. Psi j x1, psi alpha x1. Basically, we're looking at this expression and setting x3 equals x1 because of the contour integral forces that pick up a delta function. Psi L x2 psi. The indices don't matter so much. Psi alpha x4 psi L x4, something like this. The indices in R, not only do they not matter so much, I clearly made a mistake. Be psi k. Okay. So this has three copies of things like psi I x psi j x. So it looks like some t0 kind of expression, because each t0 is related to this current. So heuristically, we have found we find a relation of the form t0 cubed. So there's the indices are kind of painful to keep track of. So I've been lazy and not written them down. The important thing is the form of the answer. It looks like three copies of the current for of like the chiral piece of the current. And if you were to include all of the other terms, which we didn't include, you would find, well, T0 involves not only the chiral piece, but the anti-chiral piece. And that would expand out to match with the other terms we didn't include here. So the whole calculation is a bit messy. But the important point is to get a feeling for why this contour integral brings us to a situation where we're integrating three points, so it looks like t0 cubed. Yeah?
Can you remind me again why the operator has to be the commutator? Like the operator outside the equation?
Can you repeat the question?
Why does it have to be the operator? Why does it have to be the commutator?
Why, like this expression here?
Like on the middle board, why, when you said the OP of M an M, then you said that it'll be the sine of epsilon times the commutator.
Right. Well, I suppose to understand that, you have to think about the relationship between the OPE and the product in the algebra of operators. So if you have conserved charges, then they form an algebra whose product is given by take one guy, put another one slightly forward in time, and then because it's independent of time, you can bring them together with no singularities. And that's an associative algebra. Now the commutator we're considering is the commutator in that associative algebra. So it's, I take them together in one time ordering minus taking them together in the other time ordering. Now that's the same thing as saying like that the OPE, like there is only two, there's only two functions of epsilon, which are of d by d epsilon equals zero, and what? There's like the delta function when epsilon is positive and the delta function when epsilon is negative. That's one way of writing it. So if we take the OPE and we write it as delta function when epsilon is positive times something, that coefficient will be the product in one order. The delta function epsilon is negative will be the product in the other order. We're interested in the commutators. That's going to be the coefficient of the difference between those two delta functions.